Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Dead Frog Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Felix. This is a podcast dedicated to analyzing, dissecting, and overall trying to understand what makes stand-up comedy funny. Once again, my co-host, Allison Kloster, is still on holiday, so she will not be joining me and Ian Zandi in our discussion on Gary Goldman. That's fine. I hope Allie's doing well, wherever she is. She hasn't told us. Well, I mean, I think her friends know, but not me. today we'll be covering Gary Goldman's double stuffed in milk set from his album Gary Goldman Unrated. Gary Goldman is a stand-up. He's been doing it for over 20 years. I think I've seen him on Comedy Central's Premium Blend. He also is part of a really funny episode of This American Life. He's part of episode 676, Here's Looking at You, Kid. And I have with me a very, very funny and very prolific person in the comedy scene right now. I'm speaking about Ian Zandi, a comedy writer and performer whose subset includes sketch, improv, comedy, and stand-up. He comes from Long Beach, California. He often includes material on absurdity, the queer perspective, and pop culture. He's also on Twitter too much. And if I could speak frankly about Ian, I would say this. He's one of these Kevin Nealon types who's always working. He's always collaborating. He's working really hard. It's very welcoming to be part of a show where either Ian's hosting or we're on the same bill or he's doing tech, or I just saw him do a show and I'm on the show after that or the other way around. He's just a overall pleasure to be around. Please welcome to the pod, Ian Zandi.
Hi, thank you so much. That's very kind.
Oh, yeah, of course. You deserve it, man. You should know, yeah, that you're one of the better faces in the comedy community.
Oh, and right back at you, man. Thank you.
Oh, there we go. That's why I give praise.
There we go. Oh, I forgot we have. You know what, Joe? You're the best, the brightest. I would say, I dare say, the best looking, maybe.
Perhaps. Oh, no. I would say that title belongs to you. You, in fact, I would say that if we were in a dark room and I was hearing you speak, I'd be like, wow, this is a handsome person.
Voice for radio.
Oh, no. But yeah, I'm sure. But also, you do have a very distinct voice. It's very interesting. It's very good for comedy. No, I don't mean that's silly. But it's just,
you have to have it's a naturally voice. Funny. Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I don't do too much voiceover, so but yeah.
I think you should look into it.
No, it's very busy.
So, yeah. Ian, how long have you been doing stand up and sketch and improv and everything that you do currently?
Yeah, all that. I would say about 4 years. It depends how you measure it, of course. I did a little bit of stand up back in, I think it was 2015. You know, right before pre-Trump, and then tried a little bit of stand up. Got my feet dabbled in it, hopped over to Second City and UCB. I got involved in all theirs with sketch and improv for a couple of years. And I'm like, I did all that. Let's go back to stand-up. So, yeah, mostly doing stand-up and dabbling in sketch. So,
yeah, I know that you're one of these cats who was fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to be part of I.O. before it closed down.
Oh, yes. I.O. West, of course. I was there for maybe 2 years, did tech there too, so didn't get to complete it before it shut down, though. But yeah, I love that place.
Yeah, I think a lot of you cats that went to I.O. or performed there or worked there in any way, you guys are still, I think you guys are some of the better people there. And, the people who come to mind are like Chris Trovador, I think Serenity Garcia was part of that, and so was Jorge Barrios.
Yeah, I think I saw them all around. It was like two blocks down from Second City, so naturally, and then a bar, So no comedy club except West Side Theater over in Santa Monica has like a bar around here. So that was definitely a benefit. Their teachings were fantastic. So
where'd you start doing comedy?
Why did I start? I don't know. I think I never like grew up, I'm going to be a stand up comedian or anything. Of course I knew I had a funny voice, but was going through like a hard time, going through an abusive situation back in, what was that? Like I said, 2015, 2016. And I needed an outlet, needed a connection or a circle of, I needed something to focus on. And I listened to some podcasts, and funny full circle coming back to podcasts now. I listened to some Comedy Bang Bang. I'm like, oh, this is pretty funny. Where'd all these people start? So I followed them back to UCB and down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you decided to be productive and creative with the way that you handle that situation, because you bring a lot of, what's the word, hard work. And like, I can see you, when I see you do stand up or have seen you perform other times, I'm like, oh, this person is like doing the labor, right? They're writing. They're like, how do I, you're careful in which and how you say what you're going to say.
Right? Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a skill and it's an art. I take a bunch of darts and I throw it at a wall and see what sticks. But the thing about that is that you're there also, which means you're doing the same exact thing. So that's fantastic.
Hey, how about let's keep the focus on you. I'm tired of these compliments. I like being part of the comedy scene. I like that, like in the past few years, it has become a little friendlier, especially since like, I guess we first met each other at Second City, right?
That seems right. I spend most of my time there in the before times, before lockdown, so probably.
Yeah. Oh, and before lockdown, you were really on a roll. I think, 2019, you were just getting booking after booking, right?
Yeah. I had, I think that poster probably had like 20 dates or something on it. Now it's more like 4, but I was on a good roll. Oh, well, what can you do? Waiting out, so
your wings got clipped,
and it's no one's fault. It's just like, we gotta sit it through. So,
yeah. If you don't mind sharing, would you be able to fill us in on like one of your first attempts at comedy or your first stand up sets or bits?
Yeah. So this is funny. Like I said, I didn't grow up with a lot of comedy, and there's some SNL or stuff like that. But I did watch the movie The Man on the Moon. Have you seen that with Andy Kaufman?
Yeah, Jim Carrey as
Andy Kaufman. Yeah, Jim Carrey is Andy Kaufman. And I first saw that, and it blew my mind. I'm like, oh, maybe this is how you're supposed to do comedy. So at the time, I saw that movie. I'm gonna be like that. I'm gonna do that. That seems cool and easy. So there was a Flappers, not in Burbank, but at Claremont, which is where I lived at the time. Probably like an hour or so east of LA. And I went there to their open mic. It was like maybe my second mic ever, and all I did was go up on the stage and start counting, and that's all I did. I think they give you like 3 minutes. Time or something, and I just counted the whole time, and people did not like it. I think I had a bottle thrown at me. My friend Steve was there because he was like, yeah, I'm gonna support you, man. He didn't know what I was gonna do, and yeah, I mean, like, people thought I was being a dick, which I wasn't trying to be a dick, but I'm like, oh, this is how you do it, right? No, I do regret it, of course, because I'm like, oh, that's not how necessarily the space or the time to do it. But it did teach me to get over stage fright very fast. Because I'm like, oh, if people are booing and literally throwing stuff at you like they do at cartoons, like, oh, that's the worst they can get. It cannot get worse than that. Because you already experienced it at your second mic ever. So that's a memorable early one. I don't know if it's definitive of me, per se. Where I'm willing to try like risky stuff, but I'm not going to go up on stage now and start counting. That's not the best.
Well, what I have to say about that is, you as a comic, you have to be able to take risks and like really commit to what you're doing. But mm-hmm. also, you should know. I mean, you're in Claremont. They're not really the type to be into absurd or subversive humor in that way.
No, it's a weird area because Pomona's like, oh, it's kind of gritty. It's not the best area to live in. And then Claremont like has the Claremont Colleges, which is where Flappers is right next to, and very high nose. I would say like very almost snobby, like David Foster Wallace went there, like he lived around there, like that kind of intellectual type. So it's a weird blend around there. That being said, that Flappers is not open anymore. So
oh really?
Yeah, they closed down a year or two ago. Oh. Because I was so good at comedy, they had to shut it down.
R.I.P. Claremont Flappers.
Yep.
And they're, I think every Friday or so, what was the whole thing? They gave you 10 minutes at an open mic?
Maybe they did that. I was the kind of person at first when I did comedy, like, I'm going to do a mic. And to me, that meant, oh, you do one like once a month. Whereas like, oh, now you kind of have to do a little more than that if you want to keep on your game. But at the time, I'm like, I'm doing comedy. I'm out here doing it. Yeah, and they put me in like their showcase. It's still a very good place for a comic to start out. They give you a free cookie. Yeah, it was a very supportive place.
It feels supportive, but it part of me feels like, is this condescending?
Yes. It's very corporate, if that makes sense, in my opinion. But yeah, they're good for new people still.
Hey, before we start talking or listen to the set, can I ask you about something?
Yeah, what's up?
When you're mining for material, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you specifically about, like, you know, the queer perspective of your...
Oh, yeah.
How do you pull premise?
Yeah. So for that, I came out as bisexual, just for the listeners and everyone, about 2-3 years ago, something like that. So I kind of use that perspective on certain things, and I don't want to be known as like, oh, he's the bisexual comic, he does all the material on bisexual, like that could be a part of me, I think, but I don't want to be known just for that. So I do this in a very formulaic way, I feel like, where I do something fun and relatable at the top, and then I do something about queerness, and then I do more of the absurd observational stuff. So I try and lock people in.
There we go. That's kind of what I'm asking. It's like, yeah. I have the same sort of sentiment where it's like, I don't want to be labeled a Latino comic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, I'll have a mixed bag of jokes, but you really have to, like, I guess, sprinkle it in there.
Yes. Yes. That's very much it. So I'll make sure to do like a bit per show, unless it's like a full-on LGBTQ show, whereas I'm sure same thing for you, I would imagine, if it's an all Latinx show, maybe more of that material, because that's the showcase.
How do you like feel more about that, like when you know you're trying to get booked and you're like, oh, mm-hmm. well, I have to prop up this aspect of my personhood?
Yes, yes. I struggle with that sometimes. Whereas I just got accepted into one for like Midwest Queer Comedy Festival, which is great. I can meet other queer comedians and we can relate on that, I feel like. So I think there's good and there's also some bad, where it's like, oh, I know certain shows are tokenizing it. Yeah. It's like, oh, they have white guy. Bisexual white guy, so I'm the token. I mean, I'm Persian, but like, okay, I see what you're doing at your attempt for diversity, but it's probably not the best way to go about it. So I think it's good to spotlight it, but there's a time and a place and a heart and such behind it. But yeah, at least when I try and pull in mine, going back to your original question. Sorry. For material, I just keep a notepad, write down whatever's I think is funny to me, that I haven't heard a million times. I don't want to hear more Tinder jokes. I try and go for something out of left field, something that's absurd. Maybe it's a weird niche 90s pop culture reference. I have a joke, bisexual is confusing for a lot of people. You know, I'm not straight enough. I'm not gay enough. You know, I don't celebrate straight things like Toyotathon. Like, I don't think that many people have a Toyotathon joke. So I try and do things like that, where it's like, oh, nobody else is going to pull this. So,
yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Good. I think you're finding the balance. And I'm happy to know that you're not just like weaponizing like an aspect of diversity that you have to. Yeah, because it's tough. Because I do see that around as a comic. I'm not going to name anyone. Anyways, let's listen to the clip and the word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back to talk some shop.
Cool. Sounds great.
You gotta look to the Oreo people, man. That's who the sugar cookie should look up to, because Oreo just was great and then kept getting better. Like Michael Jordan, just when you thought, oh, he's the greatest ever, he just kept getting better. Like the Oreo cookie, we were fine. We were fine with the Oreo cookie. We were like, oh, it's perfect. It's perfect. And then they added double stuff. I will never forget that day that the double stuff came out, October 11th, 1982. I saw the double stuff and I said, whoa, what's the catch? You know what I mean? I was taught if it looks too good to be true, it's too, you know, too good to be true. And I said, well, what do I owe you? Double the stuff, same price. Well, how do you turn a profit? We don't care about money. We want to make you happy. Oh, well, you've succeeded. Oh, Oreo. And they didn't stop there. They could have stopped there with double stuff. And they put peanut butter in the middle. Peanut butter in the middle of an Oreo cookie. My God. That's cocky, though. That's arrogant. That's like they went up to Nutter Butter, put their finger in their chest, and said, we got it. Yeah, we'll take it from here, Nutter Butter. I think we know what we're doing with cookies. Yeah. We're Oreo. Maybe you've heard of us. Oh, yes, you have heard of us. Yeah, we're America's favorite. It's cute how your name rhymes, but we're going to take it from here, Nutter Butter. Then they put chocolate in the middle of an Oreo. Chocolate in the middle of an Oreo, my God. Delicious, but a little scary, isn't it? Because it's almost like, Oreo, have you been reading my diary? You know, that's... It's been a fantasy of mine forever. You made it happen, and I thank you. My favorite thing to put my Oreos in, milk. Here's what I do with the... I take a double stuff and I put two of them together, essentially making it a quadruple stuff, which we'll just have to wait for, but you can do it on your own. And I dunk it right in there. And you know when it's done? When it stops bubbling. Then it's done. And when it stops bubbling, I go, ding, and I take it out and I eat it. Because it's delicious. Oh, milk. It's the only thing I really like milk for. And they advertise milk too much. I'm sick of it enough. All right, we get it. There's milk. What? Why are they advertising milk? Who are they targeting with this campaign? People unaware of milk? People sitting at home, oblivious to this drink, just mesmerized by the commercial, going, oh, yeah. Oh, shit, yeah. That would go good with a cookie. Milk, you say? Am I pronouncing it correctly? Is it milk? It's not a silent K. I just don't want to make a jerk out of myself when I order it later. Or maybe there were people who were all bummed out, really depressed at breakfast. Oh, God, this Rice Krispies is so dry. If only there was some sort of beverage I could pour over it, kind of moisten it up. I tried Dr. Pepper. It was almost too effervescent. The snap crackle was deafening, and the pop, kapow!
And we are back.
What a what a time.
Whoa, Gary Goldman.
GG.
Wow, we really just heard that set right now. So good.
So good. No editing magic whatsoever, I dare say.
Yep. We just heard 3 minutes and 14 seconds of that set, both of us were in silence as we heard Gary Coleman speak.
Silence, not laughing at all. Not a single laugh.
So that you, the listener, could hear unedited. Wait, let's see. We didn't have to flood the already recorded audience laughter of that set. We didn't have to feel like we were supposed to be added to your listening experience.
This is true. It's not like a Mystery Science Theater situation. We're not narrating it.
There we go. Ian, why yes. Gary Coleman?
I actually got into him, I would say, in the last like year. My friend Steve kind of got me hooked on him with his new special, actually. Have you listened to that one yet or seen it, The Great Depression?
Yes.
It's
fun.
Fantastic. Great material on depression and such. And then I went backwards and kind of looked at his old material, and I fell in love with it. A lot of observational stuff. I'm a sucker for a name that has alliteration. Gary Coleman, Taylor Tomlinson, Clark Kent, etc. But yeah, it just stuck with me. And especially, I love observational humor and silly humor. But kind of has a point. It still has his perspective. He's not just saying this for the fun of it, but he has thoughts on it, which I think is fun.
Yeah, I think as with a lot of observational humor, and especially with Gary Coleman, he's able to state the premise clearly and just go off on that one topic for a long time. Yes. And like in a meta perspective, it's even just funny to realize as an audience that you're listening to this person speak on this topic for so long.
Yes. I think it kind of helped me just listening from him so much be like, have you ever done one of those set list mics where they just give you a topic and you have to improvise stand-up, basically?
I don't think I have. Have you?
No. I've done a couple of those, and it helps a lot with that, where it's like, oh, I've seen him do this. Obviously, his is very thought out and written down and everything, but where he can just go on one topic for a long time. And I don't know if you've heard his later album. I don't know which one it's on, but this album that we just listened to that track from is from 2003 or 6?
Yeah, either or,
One of those. And then he has like 3 to 4 tracks on Cookies. And then on one of his later albums, I think it's like 2013, he does almost the same bit again, where I don't think I've seen anyone do that, where they just take almost the same entire bit with new added jokes and stuff. But he just really loves Cookies that much that he just put it in another special again, which I think is fantastic.
Oh, there we go. Thanks for speaking positively on reusing material. Yeah, it's like, he's like, I gotta revisit this because I gotta finish this idea.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's great that he's just so passionate on it. And I do that too. I think it's a good thing. And I'm sure people want to hear it. It's kind of like when you go to a concert, you're like, I want to hear them play Everlong or something like that. Play the hits. But he remixes it a little bit. So.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I know that I think someone like Anthony Jeselnik has maybe a contrary belief on that, because I've heard him say, like,
yes,
after he does he records, he goes, damn, I think I could have had a better tag for that joke. I think I could have worded that differently, but now he can't do it because he doesn't want to be that guy who does the same material. I think he's, when he spoke to Joe Rogan, he talked about watching Seinfeld and how Seinfeld was doing like some old hits. But yeah, Gary Coleman, I mean, and also he's charming enough to pull it off.
Oh yeah. he's a very likable guy. I think he loved, you could see him having fun about it too. It's like, oh, this guy's all hyped up for Cookies? Okay. Yeah. Why is he hyped up for Cookies? And the inflection and everything too. I think it's truly the energy that goes with it that helps sell it.
Yeah.
So.
he feels approachable.
Yes. Yes.
He's a large presence, a good-looking person, and I don't want to speak on this too soon, but and if you think that I'm wrong, please push back. I feel like he's just like a softer, more approachable Dan Cook.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah, I never got into Dan Cook too much. But no, I mean, Dan Cook has some funny bits and more of that observational humor. So I definitely, he's like a stretched out Dan Cook. Yeah. I don't know. Is Dan Cook also tall? I don't know.
No, I think he might be like 5'10", 5'11".
But no, very, very approachable. Like, if he weren't a comedian, he would probably work at like Disneyland or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's there. He'd be someone who really rides his personality. But I mean, you know what? I'm not going to say it's just his charisma that gets him there. I mean, he's very talented.
Oh, no.
He's a joke writer. He's clearly a joke writer. You know, he doesn't have to, like, I don't know what his style is, whether he actually sits down and writes. My style is like, I just live, and I'm like, oh, like somehow like a tag to a joke will come pop into my head. I'm like, yeah, that's it.
Yep. Right.
But he definitely does the labor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when it comes to like him setting up this whole thing, as you mentioned, there are like a number of tracks where he does talk about cookies on that same album, Gary Goldman Rated, and he speaks about was it sugar cookies, right? That's the intro to this particular track. And he talks about how the sugar cookie should be looking up to the Oreo, which and like you're like, you have my intention, right? What's this? A cookie looking up to another cookie? Let's go down this road. Yeah, I'm in, right? And then he talks about, you know, how the Oreo keeps getting better, right? And just this simple premise, right? If you're writing jokes, you have the whole history of Oreo to draw from. All the people, all the, you know, the taste innovators at Nabisco, right? Here are all of these flavors, right? And we both know comedy loves detail.
Specifics, yes.
The more we can like be specific about this, and then like kind of keep like dig into each type of Oreo, the more we're gonna get out of this whole thing as a premise.
Yes, and I think not even just Oreo itself, which is fascinating, like you said, all the history and the specifics and the types, but people's feelings and perspectives on Oreo, looking outside, looking in, and then Oreo looking inside out. Which, yeah, exactly. There's just so much there.
Yeah, like
compared to a sugar cookie, which is just an ordinary cookie too.
Oh yeah, like he said, you know, the sugar cookie should be, you know, talking should be talking to like publishers or like or someone to help them develop a new brand, like rebrand, right? Like further that that recognition. But I like what you said about someone from the outside looking in. You know, if I was an audience member, I'd be like, oh, I hope he mentions the Oreos that I like in particular.
Yes. you're waiting on the edge of the seat to see if he acknowledges that Double Stuffed Oreos exist. Like,
yeah, and if he's able to jog your memory on a type of Oreo that you've forgotten about.
Yes.
Then you're like, I'm so into what this person is saying.
Yes, yes.
it really does something to us as humans to be able to kind of feel smart or clever for understanding the reference.
I very much agree. I love old references that people are like, oh yeah, I totally forgot about that one-hit wonder from the 90s, like, and then you pull it out and they feel related and connected to you. Like, I love that so much.
Can I share how but also how I hate references in comedy? Because like, okay, we understand that references are something that we can relate to if you understand them, if you're on the end, but sometimes they're just overdone. It's yes. like, yeah, we all kind of shared a commercial, like, time block. We all understand the same, like, products that were marketed at us, like Surge. Mm-hmm. Like, that drink Surge. Like, I've seen so many sketches where people just, like, shoehorn in a Surge reference.
Just to get a laugh.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, jeez.
Yeah, I think that's probably how I feel about Tinder. Is like, okay, you've done this premise. Like,
oh, that's how you feel about Tinder?
I think so. At least that's the
big... people reusing bios, yeah. Right? Like jokes that they heard someone else.
Yeah,
I'm afraid to like if I ever do. I don't know if I've ever been on Tinder. I have, right? But it's like I don't want to put anything funny up there because I don't want it just to be stolen by like a hack, right? Who
and no one would ever know. Yep.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, so that was my thing about hating references. Oh, so okay. Oh, he does this thing. He remembers the date Double Stuff was introduced.
Oh yes, as an aside, like real quick. Like you feel like he's gonna just talk about it. Oh, I remember the day so specifically. December 4th, 1999, or whatever the date was. It was like, oh,
October 11th, 1982.
It's such a fantastic aside.
Yeah, and like people, it's interesting because it's exactly, you're right. It's an aside, and people are like kind of like they're like no, let me laugh at this, right?
Yep.
I heard the detail. Let me do it, right? And then yeah, he talks about. I think he does this very interesting thing. When he says, you know, when I've been told that, you know, if something is too good to be true, then it's too good to be true. It's almost like, in a way, he talks about like the redundancy of that phrase, of that advice, and like mutates that into a joke because, you know, we all know this phrase, but he's saying it with such an intonation that he's pointing out the absurdity in even finishing the phrase after saying the first part.
Yeah, it almost makes me feel like he wrote that joke, needed to find somewhere to put it in, and put it inside that joke, like Russian nesting doll did. Maybe not, but I feel like that's a whole joke in itself, which is fantastic.
Yeah, this is almost like an evergreen type of joke that he found a home for. Yeah, you're right. I think that's a good observation. I can see that being true. And then he also does a few act outs here. The first one being like, I guess him asking Oreo, like, how do you profit? And they go, we don't care about profit. We just want to make you happy.
Right? That sticks with me so much.
Oh, how come?
And like, it's not a full character or anything, but it's just the fact that a mega corporation, Nabisco, Oreo, like giving a life to that, like, we know them. They're on the shelves. They're obviously profitable and everything. They want to make money. But saying the opposite, I'm like, no, we just care about your ass. That's so wholesome. Yeah. I don't know. It kind of it clings to it.
If I can speak candidly about this, it also feels like he's flirting. Like I can imagine myself saying,
oh, yeah,
a line like this if I was on a date.
I could very much see that. Yeah.
And it's not the only time he does it.
he kind of gets like ASMR, like he kind of gets closer and hey, no, it's gonna be okay, like that yeah. kind of thing. Yeah.
That's how you do it. You have to work with the yeah. Then yeah, they're like, we don't care about profit. Oh this one right here. So he changes up the mood when he starts to introduce like the Oreo with peanut butter in it.
Oh yes.
It's like he went to Nutter Butter, poked them in the chest, and said, we got this. And yeah, he does this little tag where he goes, yeah, it's cute that your name rhymes. Right. Which is like he I'm sure that he like I think he like probably believes that. He's like, okay, it's cute, you know, this Nutter Butter, that's like they've gained their success on just the fact that the name rhymes.
Right? Nothing else.
Nothing else, right? You're just like, yeah, you eat a Nutter Butter and you're like, I guess this tastes exactly like the rhyme.
It does. I mean, like, yeah, they're just okay. Like, I don't think anyone's favorite cookie is a Nutter Butter. And again, it's universal. It's everyone knows. That's not a super niche thing. It's not something that everyone's going to have every day. But like, oh, yeah, we all know what this is. We know what he's talking about. Yeah. We're on the same playing field as him.
And then also, this is our second act out of this 3-minute set. And then, this is your rule of three here. He gives three examples of the Oreo, right? Here's actually this is what he does. He introduces double stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the peanut butter. He goes on to talk about the chocolate. Then he goes back to double stuff. But when he talks about, you know, the chocolate, he does this other little flirty move where it's like, oh, chocolate in the middle of an Oreo? Have you been reading my diary?
Which means that he's that set the whole backstory for his quote unquote character of like, oh, he's been pining for this day, which
yeah. But also, that's... it's like it's a very flirty thing. Like I think it's like yeah. we're talking about like gender typical like female like or a womanly thing. It's like you know diary. It's like I think people like to see men. You know, men journal, right? But it's
oh,
like,
yeah.
But women have that. I don't believe in this, right? But it's like, but when you see a guy like being like a little feminine, right?
Yeah, people, in touch with his feelings and thoughtful things like that. Yeah,
yeah, things that everyone should be, right?
Yeah, but, yes.
But apparently, it's a novelty. People go crazy for that. They're like, "Woo, he's doing the thing that's unexpected of him as a man."
that's the thing too. I'm glad you actually pointed that out. The crowd's reaction on this is just bananas. After every like they love it. They're in love with Gary Goldman being in love with cookies. Like they're on board with
it. yeah, because they're like, this is me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's saying the things that I feel.
Yep.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too crass here, but you know, some comics talk about like having sets where they crush, and like, but it ensures it at the end it leaves them at a high rate of you know of interacting with a preferred romantic person, right? I think mm-hmm. this is one of those sets where if you say this, you know, someone might talk to you after the show and be like, "Hey, good set. You want to have a drink?" Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and he's, again, maybe it's part of the character. I don't know him in real life, but like, oh no, he seems very relatable, very approachable. Like, he seems like a guy you would want to hang out with, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, I would be so intimidated, dude. But you're so funny. You're so tall. You're so good looking. I don't know where we're hanging out. Do you need a contrast? Okay, so after he kind of goes off, he like introduces a chocolate. He does this thing that I was so upset about, but he's able to do it because he's so damn, I don't know, he has so much damn star power. He goes, you know, my favorite thing to put Oreos in, milk. And then an applause break.
Which is crazy because that's logical. It's not like, and it's soda. No, it's duh. Everyone does that. It's not even a joke almost.
Yeah, it's not even a joke.
but people were waiting for him to say it because it's a logical thing that goes in this bit. But it's not a joke, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know how you plan that as a comic. I guess it's a feeling, but that's really next level stuff right there.
Yeah.
To not even say a joke and get an applause break.
Yeah, it's word association, I guess. I mean, I do that sometimes where you just write down everything related to a topic. Cookies go with milk. And maybe he was just new somehow, maybe from working on this bit for years or whatnot, that if he holds back on saying milk for 2 minutes, people will go bananas.
Yeah, Ian, how would you feel if, like, I went on stage and then the first thing I said was, hey, you know what I do to make sure, you know what I eat to make sure I don't have to go visit the doctor's office? Apples. And then I got, like, a standing ovation.
Honestly, I'm a bad example because I laugh at anything, especially if it comes out of the blue. But if you open with that, I would fucking love it. Sorry for not allowed to curse.
No, yeah, curse as much as you want.
Oh, okay, cool. but no, it's bananas. Like, that's just a fact. It's almost anti-comedy, in a way. But I think people were on the edge of their seat, waiting.
Ian, I think this is literally flirting.
Yeah.
Like, he's flirting with, like 1,000 or more people?
But simultaneously.
Yeah.
I think you're completely right. Yep.
Yeah. Because a lot of flirting is not good humor. It's just like, I like you, and what you're saying kind of makes sense. So, yes.
Yep. It's a... And it's a... The... Not context, subtext. That's the word. I don't know, just like the inflection. And it's not necessarily what he's saying. It, like, I guess, like you pointed out, not necessarily the fact that he's saying milk. But it's, oh, he's flirting. He brought you to that place. So.
It's also because it's like also one word and one syllable.
Yep. And is it one of those funny syllables? I'm trying to think.
Oh, K is a funny sound.
Yeah, I guess it's K. It's not the M, but the K is always funny.
This is what they tell you. This is what people say. K is a funny. Like, say, there's a Stephen Wright joke.
Kangaroo. And I think peas as well. Anything that kind of pops.
Yeah, instead of jeans, say pants.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Ian.
Yes, yeah.
Hey, I don't wear jeans. I wear pants. There we go. No, okay, never mind. That
pantaloons.
Failed.
Pantaloons.
Well, real quick, there's a Stephen Wright joke where he pops in a DVD, and then the first screen it says, you know, this film has been reformatted to fit your screen. And then he goes, well, I would hope so. Otherwise, all you would see is just like a knuckle, right? And it's the K in that word. Whatever. All right.
Wait, he pronounces the K in knuckle.
In knuckle, yeah. All right, thanks. Thanks for the curse laugh. All right.
No, no. I was trying to be. I need to listen to more Stephen Wright too.
Oh, I always recommend it. He's actually going to be at the Balboa Theater in San Diego sometime in September.
In this economy?
In this situation, yeah.
I love San Diego, though. That's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like that was a thing that I knew, and I felt like that was the right moment to mention that. Anyways.
Yes, plugs for Stephen Wright.
Oh, I'm a big fan. I think he's one of my top three influences.
Oh yeah, you're great. Again, not to compliment you, but to compliment you, like, you're one of the best one-liners in Los Angeles, in my opinion. I definitely see that.
Wow, thank you. That's very thoughtful. All right, thanks. That means a lot to me. Yeah.
No, I really mean that, truly.
Thank you. Anyways, let's go back to this thing. I don't know. And then he does this thing where he's like, let me be even more relatable. He goes, you know what I do? I get 2 double stuff Oreos, put them together, quadruple stuff. Then I dunk it in the milk, you know when? Until the bubbles stop. And in my mind, I hear a ding, ding. I need it. Why? Because it's delicious. I also hate how this podcast, right? In order to get through the jokes, I have to kind of repeat them. So it's just like, it's almost like a karaoke, right? It's almost like a bad, I just.
You're doing covers of Gary Goldman's jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. That's got to be a little fun, though, because I have a shit memory. Like, I can't remember any. So I can't, like, quote other people's jokes. But if I had it written down like that, that's fun.
Actually, it is. But fun. Now, yeah, it's like almost doing another character.
Yeah, yeah. Because you almost kind of have to do their delivery and everything, too. I love that. but quadruple, like, that immediately paints a funny picture in my brain of, because everyone's done that. Again, a super relatable thing. Quadruple in itself is just a funny word.
Yeah.
Then bubbles and ding. Like, it paints a very vivid, kind of like Andy was talking with Mulaney's Salt and Pepper Diner. Like, it paints the whole scenario of, and this one probably didn't even happen, of a situation. And you can see it and you can feel it and you can taste it.
Yeah, I mean, but also he's you can feel it. It's like minutia people don't talk about.
Yes,
it's like it's almost like one thing you can add on to that, not to like be weird about like I'm not trying to give Gary Goldman a joke, right? But
oh, I want to hear your pitch.
Here's like a half cocked idea here. It's like if you're talking about Oreos, right? It's like, you know that seal. We're like, how incapable are we as a society, right? That we have to have like a gash in the Oreo wrapper to successfully get it out. Like, what was happening? It was like, were too many people losing Oreos in the process of opening the bag? You know, like fumbling and dropping the Oreos as they opened it, as they ripped the opening too widely.
Well, the thing with that, too, is that it's resealable. Why the hell would you ever need to reseal? I eat it all in one sitting. Like...
Yeah, exactly. That would be, yeah, like also like family size, right?
Yeah.
How about this? I'm dating myself, right?
Yep. Whenever they I just use it. I'm like, no, this is just this is meal prep. Okay.
Yeah, I have a certain amount of carbs that I need to hit. Also, I'm vegan. Oreos are vegan, and I need carbs.
Oh yeah, they are. That's very true. Yeah.
So then, yeah, you're right. The quadruple is funny. It gives you a high score at Scrabble. let's see. Oh, then he talks about milk. This is where he really does the act out, right? Or like the kind of like he goes into real silly town here. He's like, who are they trying to target with these milk ads? Who has not heard of milk?
Oh, yes.
I think this one you really need to sell. At least from my experience, where you play a character who just does not know about anything.
Like, yes. Well,
what's this thing? What's this? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know improv and everything. That's... By far, they tell you never, ever to do that character unless it's, like, written, because someone who doesn't know anything has no perspective. But he pulls it off, so.
Yeah, different setting. He doesn't...
Yeah.
They're almost... He creates a wall for to bounce absurdity off of.
Yes.
I do like how he moves into the person who was like, these Rice Krispies are a little dry, but like how he mentions, like, they, you know, I used to use Dr. Pepper, but it was too effervescent, right? Another $10 word.
Effervescent. Yeah, that's the thing, too. He sneaks in, like, I don't even know 100% what that word means, but I believe him. If he used it completely incorrectly, I would never, ever know the difference. but I'm like, yes, he's a smart and tall, intelligent man. I will believe that he's using that word correctly. But I love how he sneaks those big Scrabble words in there.
People love that, right? Because they seldom hear those words. So when they do, it's like a little bell goes off.
Yeah. And only a few people can pull it off. Like if Bill Burr was going on an angry rant and just said effervescent or whatever the word was. Like, what are you doing, Bill Burr? I don't. This isn't you. But if like Dimitri Martin did it, I was like, oh yeah, of course, you're Dimitri Martin. You can get away with this. So,
I do like the idea of like, I like the visual of like a Bill Burr special. He says effervescent, and people try to leave. They're like, yeah, that took me out of it. I gotta go pay the babysitter.
They just snap out like a like a Get Out trance. Like, now I would love to see him use it incorrectly and see if anyone notices the difference. I love him though. I do love Bill Burr.
Yeah, we on the podcast do want careers in comedy, and we will say we love every comedian out there.
Yep.
We harbor no resentment to anyone at any point for any reason.
No.
Please give us jobs. Please let us open for you.
I am a sellout, please.
Okay. Yeah, then he does his final thing for this set, or for this for this track. He said, you know, with the Dr. Pepper and the Rice Krispies, it was like more of a snap, crackle, and a kapow. And it was like,
and that's the rule of threes, based off a well-known phrase, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it subverted your expectation, or But I mean, other than that, if we can just recap the set, I think it was obviously it was a really good set. I mean, if we're talking about it,
yeah.
You know, he sets up his premise very clearly. Within that premise, he finds a few things that he can talk about that are going to be known by the audience, at least references within the reference that kind of make it an inside sort of thing. And each reference that he brings up, he talks about a little bit, right? He does one or two lines about, makes a few jokes. He's very, what's the word? He executes things very concisely.
Yes.
No fat, just, and here's the thing, right? Even though he has like this observational thing, I feel like observational can get really fluffy very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, no, I'm going to get punchy. This is it. I'm going to hit this, boom, boom, boom. I'm out of there. He's not afraid to do act outs. Because of his like pacing, his act outs are very available to the audience. It's not, you can stay on board. You don't get lost.
Yeah. It's not like a full character either. Where it's like, oh yes, it does have a point of view. It's a very concise way of conveying the act outs and everything. But he doesn't go, I'm a little hobbit. Oh, you know, nothing like that. Like, that's shit that I would do or Eddie Izzard would do. But like, he's very grounded in it still, even though he's talking about an Oreo having feelings, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I'm a little goblin. I'm a little Keebler elf who's also a cookie mascot, and also is relevant to this. So this act out is about a Keebler elf who wants to get a job at Oreo, but he can't because he's union at the elf factory.
See, I would still love that. That's more of like a Patton Oswalt thing, but like I would still love that. but that's not Gary Goldman. He knows his lane. Which is doing social commentary, I guess, on the state of the Oreo. Yeah,
being relatable.
It's grounded. I think it's very grounded.
Yeah.
So
he's able to, okay, after act out, he gets a little goofy, even within a goofy set, right? Even within telling jokes, he becomes goofy about the milk ads, and like he plays that. That he uses that rhetorical device of like the really dumb character. And then he talks about he actually leans into this very absurd idea of Rice Krispies and in lieu of milk, Dr. Pepper. Right. ultimate great set, I think. Any last words on it?
No. Love him. And if you like this, check out, he's got a whole bunch of stuff. He's got Last Comic Standing. He has a whole, what did you say, 20 years worth of experience?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yep.
And he gets better over time. Not that the old stuff like this from 2003-6 is still very good, but like his new stuff has a lot of perspective on it. I think it's really good. So,
yeah, very funny guy. Very long pants.
Mm-hmm.
Ian, before we go, can we plug or how do we get to know more about you?
Yes, I am on social media way too much. But I love it. It's a good tool for one-liners and content. And it keeps me happy. I love doing it. It's just my name on all the socials. So IANZANDI as an iguana. Ian Zandi on all the socials. Instagram. I don't do TikTok. Twitter. Facebook. All that fun stuff.
Yeah, so. And visit the Dead Frog podcast Instagram page. Give us a follow. There you'll find Ian Zandi's headshot. And, you know, I'll tag his profile so you can more easily access his stuff if you want to do it that way. You know, Ian, I think we've killed that frog.
I think we killed it.
All right, man. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Appreciate it.